Och nu då, är ni in the mood for a moonlight serenade? Nu visar vi en musikalisk biografi över mannen som skapade sitt eget sound, Glenn Miller och hans orkester.
I think his type of music was pretty much original.
He created a harmonization which made the thing very enjoyable, very memorable, and very understandable.
The American public goes for if you want to call it a musical logo. They've always accepted these other kind of bands like a Tommy Dorsey with his trombone theme and his style, or Benny Goodman with his clarinet and his style. I think that Glenn's sound was even more lasting than these others because it was not just an instrument, he created a sound and a feel.
You consider the style of voicing that he used in the sax section, with the lead clarinet blowing lead, of course, and one of the tenors doubling the melody an octave lower, and the other saxes filling in the harmonies. That gave a very distinctive sound.
This is what really set the band apart and made it an individual band. That clarinet lead was the identifying sound of the Glenn Miller Band forever after.
What kind of a guy was Glenn Miller? Depends on who you talk to.
Glenn Miller was probably one of the most honest, straightforward men I've ever known. He is also one of the most uptight men I've ever known. He was very hard to pierce that veneer. He was quite defensive in many ways, emotionally. He never wanted to show his emotion. He came from a Midwest background, early Midwest background, where men were men, and they stood on their own.
Up in front of a band, he was kind of dry, but he was a warm person if you knew him, and if he had the time to be anything else.
I got along with him, but he used to bully people and get one up on them. And he had the guys actually afraid of him. I was not afraid of him.
Oh, he was a very astute businessman. He was all out to, have a very successful band. He was willing to try anything to make it.
don't know what it is that makes a band tick. I guess it's just playing together. Either you have it or you don't.
I knew that Glenn was a very opinionated man, and I knew that he either liked you or he didn't like you. He was that way about musicians. He either liked the way they played or didn't like the way they played. This was a world of black and whites and no grays.
No one can say I'm playing any favorites, although I have a few.
Well, a lot of the boys in the band thought that Glenn was hard to work for. There is, I believe, no such thing as a leader that's hard to work for. When a leader hires his sidemen, he expects them to do what he wants them to do, play like he wants them to play.
To some guys, he was just like that, you know, just a determined. To some other guys, stubborn. Some other guys, you know, wise. To me, you know, he was a friend. And I recognized a lot of these qualities that other people put him down for, but he never acted that way toward me.
But I got along great all those years with Miller. I loved the man.
I think he was a man that we could all be proud of having known, and I know I was.
Okay, boys, let's go to work.
She's a toast
of Kalamazoo, zoo, 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 zoo.
Years have gone by.
My, how she grew.
I liked her looks when I carried her books
in Kalamazoo, zoo, 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 zoo.
I'm gonna send a wire hopping on a flight.
Living today.
Am I dreaming? I can hear her screaming.
Everything's okay, A-L-A-M-A-Z-O. Oh, what a gal, a real pepperoo.
I'll make my bid for that freckle-faced kid I'm hurrying to.
I'm going to Michigan to see the sweetest gal
in Kalamazoo.
Zoo, 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 zo
Glenn was born in Clarinda, Iowa, which was a small town then, it's much bigger now. And when he was about 5 years old, his father was a homesteader, and he was also a janitor and a carpenter and worked at various menial jobs. Moved the family to Tryon, Nebraska. And there they lived in a sod hut for quite a while. And Glenn learned to take care of himself. He helped take care of the family. And he was, of course, very much interested in music. In fact, he'd started playing mandolin at the time. And he hated it. And he finally found a trombone in a store, and he made a deal with a man to get the trombone, and he started taking trombone lessons. And his family couldn't understand why he was interested in that. In fact, they figured he'd never amount to very much.
I went out on the L one night to the Southmore Hotel where Ben Pollock's orchestra was playing. And, of course, I went in, and I had known Ben Pollock as a drummer, and I went out, and that's where I met Glenn, who was the trombone player in the band. That's where I first met him.
Ben Pollock had one of the greatest bands of the era in the late 1920s. He had great musicians with him, not only Jack Teagarden, but a young clarinetist named Benny Goodman.
They were playing swing arrangements, and I'd never heard a band that good. Just great. I didn't know enough about trombone to be a good judge of it, but I told Ben Pollock about a trombone player in Texas named Jack Teagarden. And I remember Pollock said, yeah, he said, well, all those guys down there think they're great until they get up here with the real pros. And lo and behold, a year later, he had Jack in the band.
But what would they do about Glenn? Because there's only one trombone player in the band. And so they talked to Glenn, and Glenn went to hear Teagarden. And he said, man, I mean, this guy's too much. I can't compete with him. Get him, and I'll just stay on as an arranger. And so that's what happened. Eventually, the band went to New York, and Glenn came to New York with the band, arranged there, and became established in New York as an arranger, and also later on as a studio trombonist.
Smith Ballou was the darling of the jet crowd, you know, in the nightclubs. So he got a big band, he got Glenn Miller to organize it for him, and we'd go out and we'd play for a month, or sometimes a little more, and then we'd break up for a month, and then we'd get together again. That's how bad things were at that time. This is during the Big Depression, remember.
Dorsey Brothers was the best band that the Dorseys ever had, I think.
Glenn was the man who really set the style of the band. He did practically all the arranging. Glenn was not only a good arranger and quite a good trombone player, but also an expert businessman.
Tommy was on first horn and did all the solos. No way Glenn could have enjoyed it. But Tommy was a better trombone player than Glenn, so besides that, he was the leader, you know.
Customer wants Never Say Never.
But Tommy, remember rehearsal? We never did finish that number.
Oh, let's do it, but don't kick it off too fast. Never Say Never, boys. What's that for?
That's for playing it too fast.
No musician can do that to me in public, not even my own brother.
Why don't you leave the band right for a change?
When it comes to leading the band, I don't need any advice from you.
Look, let's play the numbers right or not play them at all.
All right, we won't play them at all.
If you walk out now, it's for good.
Okay, for good.
Jimmy and Tommy, oh, their fights were beautiful. They're legend. History made those fights.
Well, I think the big band period was one of the great periods in American music. It was the only time that I can think of when pure quality in music really succeeded.
And I think Benny was responsible in a great way for the so-called swing era, which was a large part of the whole dance band scene. They had a great feeling of swinging, and Benny, of course, his playing was superlative.
I actually met Glenn for real the first time when he was with the Ray Noble Band. And I used to go down and talk to these people, and I got to know Glenn quite well. And one day Glenn said to me, you know, I'm leaving the band, and I'm going to organize my own band. And I wonder, you go around to hear all these musicians, you being with Metronome, you have to cover all the spots. I wonder if you could help me find some musicians. And especially guys who don't need much money, because I don't have any money, he said. And see what, if you can help me organize this band.
Well, he introduced me to Glenn, and Glenn offered me a job in his band that he said he was organizing. I asked Glenn, how much are you going to pay? He says, $45 a week on the road. I said, well, Glenn, that's what I'm making now. He says, well, we're going to be great. As I grow, you grow, you know, that kind of a thing. Bands that were popular had good gigs, had wonderful engagements, but bands that were not well known, like Glenn wasn't in the band I was in, we relied upon hotel engagements, one-nighters, and ballrooms, perhaps.
Well, the band had many difficulties, the first band. Not only was it financially difficult, because nobody knew the band, and they'd play for something like $250 a night for the whole band. But also, there was trouble within the band, because there were some guys who liked to drink a lot. And sometimes they wouldn't be at their best.
Certainly the word responsible didn't exist in that band.
In those days, traveling was so difficult because they couldn't afford a bus. So what they did, they went in various cars. And the guys would pile into these cars, and they'd go to these various towns, especially in snowy weather. And sometimes part of the band wouldn't get to the job on time. It was mind-boggling. And then Glenn, of course, was such a perfectionist. And if these guys didn't show up, he'd blow his top.
There were very few guys that were married. Most everybody was single, of course. So they had their own lives to govern. And we weren't thinking much about getting a big threshold on life at that time. We were more concerned with blowing a horn, having fun, finding a place to jam at night, maybe go out and get some ribs.
Glenn had personal problems, and that was with his wife. They wanted children very badly, and Helen, unfortunately, could not have children because she had to have an operation, a very serious operation, during the time of this band, and it drove Glenn nuts.
Glenn broke up the band, as you know, New Year's Eve, I guess that was 1937, going into 38.
Fellas, I know you've always been as proud of this band as I have. Pride has kept more good bands together than money. But I don't want to go on when we can't give them the kind of music they want. Now, I know you boys won't have any trouble getting good jobs. So, let's call the whole thing off.
It never caught on. It was awfully good. And if you listen to some of the records, there's some very good stuff on them. But no way you could tell it was Glenn Miller. Well, I felt very sorry that Glenn had given up the band And not only for Glenn's sake, but also for my sake, because I had predicted in Metronome that would be the number one band one of these days. So, of course, when he decided that he'd like to start again, I was very encouraging.
I was playing in a strip joint. The ladies disrobed, you know. That's what the entertainment was. And so Glenn came on in with his wife and two more out-of-place people you never saw in your life. She's sitting there with her white gloves on, and these girls don't have anything on. When the show was over, Glenn called me over to his table, and I knew who he was. He did what I wanted to do. I want to be a trombone player, you know, in the big time. And so he said, he told me a couple of nice things, and I asked him if I could use it for a recommendation, because that's what I wanted to do. And he said, well, why don't you just come with me? He said, how soon can you come with me? I said, right now, I'm packed. I showed him. I have my toothbrush in my pocket. That was it. I didn't even have a place to stay. You know, so he said, come with me now. So I did.
When I came there, and I was in there through 9 or 10 trumpet players, so I was rather a survivor. But I noticed the things, you know, that he really had that pressure on people. I don't mean that he purposely intimidated them, but boy, you didn't do many things wrong.
Don't look at me. You signed the application.
Yeah. So I think that he decided that, you know, there should be 16 guys all who play this thing meticulously, and that included him. And, you know, I don't know that he ever hired any bad musicians, and he certainly wasn't a bad musician. He was a great musician, but I think that he was able to focus away from that trombone playing and into maybe making that whole ensemble work. And boy, it worked. We were always together.
Glenn was having plenty of financial problems getting born, you know, because he didn't want to settle for anything other than the best.
Boys, we got a chance to open Glen Island Casino on Thursday, so just for old time's sake, how about a rehearsal at 2 o'clock?
Glen Island Casino was a place that the young kids liked to go to. In those days, as today, it was the young kids who determined who was going to be successful.
Okay, boys, break it up. It's opening night, so let's make it a good one. Huh?
Okay, come on.
Yowza, chief.
All right, chief.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight there comes music from beside the waters of Long Island Sound. NBC's microphones are present at Glenn Miller's smart opening in the Glen Island Casino, mecca of music for moderns, just off the Shore Road at New Rochelle, New York. Now may we proffer our invitation to dance to the music of one of America's foremost swing trombonists and ace arrangers, Glenn Miller and his orchestra.
Remember, I was there at the opening night, and it was packed. The word got around that this was the band to watch.
You could tell there was something right there, you know. I used to say, if you wait long enough, something right happens. And it was very right that we'd be in Glen Island Casino at that point.
They'd call the cops and the fire department out. No more. They wouldn't let people in. It was phenomenal, the way the guy hit.
We also got a little bit of indication when that In the Mood, when we played that, because we thought that was absolutely the worst thing ever written.
We'll be right back.
The band did catch on at Glen Isle Casino, and by the time it got through, which is a period of less than 3 months, it was so successful that when it went into theaters, which the band really made money, he went in there for at least 10 times the price that he had been getting before.
We left Glen Island Casino and we went down to the Capitol Theater in Washington, D.C., and they started getting us out of bed in the morning to play an extra show because there were so many kids down there really screaming and yelling for Glenn Miller.
Hotel Pennsylvania, and they booked us in the Paramount Theater at the same time, and we were playing for Chesterfield, six programs a week for Chesterfield, three for the East Coast and three for the West Coast. You see, tape hadn't been invented then, so you had to do those live. We did 140 performances in 2 weeks. That's a lot.
I enjoyed every moment of it. Even though we got very, very little sleep at times, the horns never got cold. They never went into the cases to go from one gig to another.
During those times when Glenn was first becoming successful, he really didn't quite know how to handle it. There was so much for him to do. He was being called upon so much. And I remember one time he told me, he said, "George, you know, I'm beginning not to really like myself." I said, "Why is that?" He said, "Well, so many people ask me to do things that I should be doing, but I can't be doing, and I feel terrible about them, and yet they don't understand."
The people who listen to you on the radio, the kids in schools, the girls in offices and shops, they want to see you. And every time they do, they go out and buy your latest record.
Rex is right. It isn't the carriage trade that pays our salaries, boys. It's those kids that put those nickels in the jukeboxes all over the country.
The band sounded good, but everybody was pretty stiff. You know, it's pretty hard to concentrate like we used to have to and maintain this discipline and be laid back and get this swing, relaxed feeling that everybody wants to hear.
And we play ballads. Oh, so slow. And I told him one time, I said, "Glenn, you can never accuse me of dragging, because if we slow down, we're going to stop. I said, we're pretty close to it now." And he explained, and the fast things, the killers, were way up. And I said, why? He says, "You see the floor?" He says, "Nobody can get on it. And they're whispering in each other's ear." He says, "When they stop that, we'll pick them up." He said, "But I'm not going to change it. Because as long as they're on the floor, we're home." And he was right.
Trigger was a personality. He was a great player. Glenn got him out of Alvino Ray's band, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
So he asked me all kinds of questions. He said, "Do you drink?" I said, "No." I said, "Do you smoke pot?" I said, "No." So he said, "How much money do you want?" And I said, he didn't know I would have taken any. I said, "Well, now that's up to you." Well, that struck him really fine. He liked that. So that's when I joined the band. It was like one of the happiest days of my life.
And when Trigger came in, at least we had two guys trying to make it.
We swung pretty hard. It was really good. We were a good combination.
Here's Tuxedo Junction.
"Listen, fellas, this is not like last time. That was murder. 36 towns in 45 days. Why, this time we only play 29 towns."
"In how many days?"
The band sounded quite different. It had a looseness about it, had a swing, and the rhythm section kind of got going. which meant that the band would react to the rhythm section.
Well, one of the things that Glenn focused on was visual as well as oral showmanship. I mean, the arrangements were exciting, but so were the way he trained his musicians to move. The trombones would all go like this, or else he'd have one trombone go like this, another one go like this, and then the trumpets would stand up and sit down together.
The first day I got on the stage with the band, I was in Capitol Theater, Washington, D.C., and I had been watching them with their movements, with the plunger and the hats. And Helen Miller was sitting in the audience, and the comment after the seeing me up there was that the new trumpet player is not extending his left hand far enough.
It's showbiz. A big band is showbiz. It's quite a spectacular thing to watch.
The beginning of Glenn's militaristic approach to everything, and the band was very uptight in many ways because it had to do that. Your shoes had to be shined exactly right. You had to have a certain amount of your handkerchief showing in your breast pocket. Lord help you if you weren't shaved or your hair wasn't combed properly. Glenn was a demon for exactness and for looking good, and also, of course, for sounding good.
Was an experience.
We lived high off the hog. I mean, it was great. I went to Beverly Hills and bought all my clothes. I was a clothes freak in those days.
It happened in Sun Valley not so very long ago.
Chattanooga, when we were first given our parts, the Modern Heirs and myself, to learn for the Sun Valley Serenade movie, we thought, well, what a dog this thing is. It's not going to get off the ground.
Chattanooga Choo Choo, run it down again. Let's go. One, two. It's my day. Bend an ear and listen to my version
of a really solid Tennessee excursion.
Pardon me, boy, is that the Chattanooga choo-choo?
Yes, yes, rank 29.
Boy, you can give me a shine.
Can you afford to board Chattanooga choo-choo?
I got my fare
and just a trifle to spare.
You leave the Pennsylvania station about a quarter to four. Read a magazine and then you're in Baltimore.
Dinner in the diner, nothing could be finer
than to have your ham and eggs in Carolina.
When you hear the whistle blowing eight to the bar, then you know that Tennessee is not very far. A certain party at the station,
satin and lace.
I used to call Funny Face. She's gonna cry until I tell her that I'll never roll.
So Chattanooga choo-choo,
won't you choo-choo me home?
Chattanooga, Chattanooga,
all aboard.
Chattanooga, Chattanooga,
get aboard.
Chattanooga, Chattanooga, choo-choo.
Won't you choo-choo me home?
Chattanooga choo-choo.
I think everyone listening in on the radio should know, Glenn, it actually is a recording of Chattanooga Choo Choo, but it's in gold, solid gold, and it's really fine.
That's right, Paul. And now for the boys in the band and for the whole gang, thanks 1,200,000.
That's nicely put, Glenn, and I know that our sponsors are mighty proud of that record, too. So now, suppose we enjoy you and the boys playing what's on that gold record.
Chattanooga Choo Choo.
Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
When we came out to California to make the second picture, Orchestra Wives, we were promised a vacation at the end of the picture. And instead, we had to get right on the train and go back to Chicago. And on the way back on the train, the rumor started that Glenn had decided, it was after Pearl Harbor, and the rumor came out through the band that Glenn had decided he was going to go into the service.
He tried to enlist us, the whole band, as a unit, but there wasn't any one branch of the service would take an organized band.
I made a trip with Glenn on a train, and we had a drawing room together, and we sat up all night talking. He was very morbid that night. He said, I'm going into this thing, he said, but I know I'm not coming back.
You know, folks, it makes me feel a little sad to leave Marion, Tex, Skip, the Modern Airs, this wonderful gang of boys in the band, and all our friends listening. If there's a lot of swell guys in the outfit, I'm going in, and maybe all of us can get together again after this thing is over. In the meantime, I'll see you all in the Army, and we'll say goodbye in the best way we know how.
I think he was very patriotic guy. He was over the age limit, you know, for a requirement for the draft at that time, and he volunteered actually and gave up a multi-million-dollar business to the Army and to do what he could for the war effort and entertaining the troops. I think he was a very patriotic man.
Country at that time was we're gonna lick these guys and that's that, you know.
Glenn took his captaincy or his commission very seriously, and I remember one time I was in a walking with him to his car, to his staff car, and we were about to get in, and I said, "After you, Glenn." And he said, "Turn around." I said, "What's the matter with you, Simon?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Don't you know you're supposed to get in first? You're supposed to sit on my left hand side." I said, "Okay." So I did. But that was my first real hand-to-hand grasp of how G.I. Glenn could be.
First of all, I would never call being in the Army fun. We were in New Haven, we were the post band. We started out with 28 men. I never disciplined anybody in the outfit. First of all, we were all musicians. It was a big drag to be in the Army in the first place. So I didn't really discipline anyone, per se.
I was supposed to be marching around with a glockenspiel. I did that, but to this day, I cannot figure out exactly what all those signals were. So, unfortunately, I would find myself heading that way, an enormous orchestra was heading that way, and I was making little clings on the glockenspiel, and after a while, I thought they're making a wonderful diminuendo. And then I found out they were 3 blocks away, so I went to the nearest bar.
Glenn had a tough time when he was in the Army because the other Army personnel really resented him because he was better known than they were. And he didn't follow the strict orders, although he tried to, but he didn't always do exactly what he was supposed to do. And I remember one time some of these guys were objected to the kind of martial music that the band was playing because they swung things like St. Louis Blues March and so forth. And we do that on parade on the New Haven Green.
One officer said, "Well, Sousa marches were good enough for our men in 1918. And Glenn said, "Tell me, Major, are you still flying the same airplanes you did in 1918?
For the second time in a generation, the youth of America is marching off to war. But this time to new and livelier rhythms, the new style of bandsmen like Captain Glenn Miller. This is the wartime tempo of a fighting but light-hearted nation.
It was an easy life, really. We worked hard because we had certain duties around the place, but as far as real hard work was concerned, no, it wasn't hard. When we got to England, then we found out what hard work was about. Every time I sat down, I was beating the drums. While we were there, the bombs kept coming over, and some of them got quite close. All of a sudden, after these things were going over, we'd only been there about a week, I guess, and the guys wanted to stay and have Sunday off. They hadn't had any time off to go up and see London, you know.